Computers, I hate them.
Let me know why.
Are we going to stop this madness? Can we just find a computer that works and just move on with our lives?
I'm assuming you're having problems.
Do we have to upgrade every 4 to 6 months? Honestly,
I hope not.
Remember your Apple IIe that you had?
Yes.
Didn't it work awesome?
Yes.
Oh, that's it. That's all I have.
Okay. All right.
Hello and welcome to episode 249 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is...
Adam, Vancouver.
What's going on, Adam? Amazon. Say Amazon.
Oh, I was saying it. You overstepped. You didn't even give me a chance. I was about... and then you overstepped.
Okay, let's try it again then.
Okay, try it again.
Hey, what's ongoing, Adam?
Can I talk now?
What's going... on, Adam.
Amazon.
What'd you buy on Amazon this week? Oh, wait a second. Why are we mentioning Amazon?
Because people who click through give us money.
Also because we can't get real sponsors.
Oh, that too.
I thought that was the answer we agreed upon. Yeah.
Well, what about we're sponsored by Two Hosers t-shirts?
Yeah, sold one today, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Just cool. I mean, we sold other ones, but we happened to sell one just today, as a matter of fact.
Is that because your daughter grew out of hers?
No, I didn't buy one.
Oh, okay.
I can't afford to buy one. I'm a podcaster.
Do you get a email that says, you sold one new t-shirt?
Correct.
You do?
I do.
Wow.
Do you want me to forward them to you every time we get them?
Yeah. Well, it'll only be once a month, right?
Yeah, 20, yeah, two emails this year. All right. No, we sold more than that. I'm just kidding. I'm only joking.
All right. Get your Christmas presents ready. Two Hosers t-shirts.
Yes. That's a good present, actually. Oh, I said I was going to take pictures for this week. I didn't.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you sell. Let's say you move units.
Yeah.
Yeah, by not bothering.
I didn't buy anything on Amazon this week, unfortunately.
I don't think I did. I don't remember if I did. So there you go. Interesting. I'm sure I did. I've been looking around. I've been looking for... I gotta be looking for a new computer, that's for sure.
Okay. Can you buy that on Amazon?
I don't think they have the newest model that I want on Amazon, and so it's a big thing. And I don't want to buy it in the German Apple store because I don't want the German keyboard because it's QWERTZ and not QWERTY, and they got the umlauts, and I don't really care for the umlauts. It's a whole umlaut situation.
So when you're going to have to wait till you come back to Canada?
Probably that's going to be the plan. I'll probably buy one. The only rub there is that I will need it. Like, I'll get off the plane, and like I'll start working while I'm in the lineup at customs.
Right.
That's how I plan my Vancouver trips, really down to the wire. And so I don't know if I'll have time to go and buy one and then dial it in to my specs that I like.
I see.
So it's a pretty big problem that to have. But here's the thing. So I have an old computer. It's old. I believe I bought it at the end of 2008, a MacBook Pro.
Last week on the podcast, you were singing the praises of how you made all these updates, and this thing was like purring like a kitten.
It was bulletproof.
Yeah.
For 36 hours.
Okay.
It was awesome. And but then
it's Chris Markwart's fault because he's the one that gave you the tip on what you had to do to make this thing sing.
You're right. I always praise him. I never give him his what for when he gives me bad advice. And this was bad advice, evidently.
Okay.
Or maybe it's a bad SSD drive. I don't know. I'm sure that can happen. I've tried everything. That's the thing. So I've really put it through its paces. So yeah, so I long story short, too late for that. I was having real issues. Like, everything was dialed in on my computer. Life was good. It all worked. I needed to keep the old operating system because I like Final Cut Pro, not Final Cut Pro X or 10 or whatever they're calling it. That's not for me. I'm old school. I need the old Final Cut Pro.
Okay.
And it worked on Snow Leopard 10.6. Everything is working great. I could use the web. I could pay my bills. I could do this thing called email. Everything was fine.
Right.
Lightroom worked. And most importantly, I could do everything I needed to do on Final Cut Pro and quickly. But it was starting to hang, I guess, because the internet said, hey, we're going to make things more difficult. And so your computer could no longer keep up. That's pretty much what's happening.
Okay.
As far as I can tell, because it's Java this and Flash this. And I think I upgrade my Flash player 6 or 7 times a day. Why can't Flash just say, hey, we're done. We're terrible. We're bad at this. Do something else. Don't even have Flash anymore.
Right.
That would be an ideal situation. But no. It's like every couple of hours, like, oh, man, we fix that other thing. So here, download this one. So I'm tired of that.
Okay.
And so Flash is kind of, and I think it's one of the many things that is killing my laptop. And, you know, I can actually go and afford to buy a new laptop. I don't want to.
Right.
I don't want it. On principle, I'm tired of this dance. I love technology. Do not get me wrong. I've been watching the baseball playoffs via the internet.
Yes.
That's awesome. I love that. I love the fact that we record a podcast and put it out and people all around the world can ignore us. I like that. That's great, and I can listen to other people's podcasts and do like this like that part is amazing. But the constant, oh, you need this, you need this, you need this, and then you get the fanboys going on there crying, like, well, this one was 2 milliseconds short on the megaflop, and nobody cares.
Right.
Computers are really, really good. They're really good now. Just stop. Please stop.
Just not your computer right now.
No, but mine's old. Like, that's fine. Okay, and I'm going to end up buying a new one. I know it. But can we just agree that I'll buy this one and then we all just stop? It doesn't need to go 4 microseconds faster. It's good. We're good. I can wait the 12 microseconds for it to boot.
Right.
Just stop.
The problem with that is that Apple still needs to make money.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
They have plenty of money. I mean, yeah. I can make a better iPad or make something like when the iPad came out. Do you remember what did you think of the iPad when it was first announced a few years ago?
It's pretty awesome.
Really, I thought it was like I was like looking at that, thinking, why would I need that? Like that's I have an iPod, I have a laptop. What do I need that for? That's ridiculous. And then on version 2, I started using it, and I thought, yeah, right, this is actually awesome. And then I bought the iPad Air and thought, oh, no, yeah, this really is the greatest thing in the world. I do love this.
Right.
So go and invent something new that fools me into thinking it's awesome. Don't just keep, you know, screwing around with what works.
I hear you.
So here's what happened. So I go ahead and I bought, in order to kind of keep my laptop current and still be able to use it, I was told buy an SSD, and that'll make your life easy. And don't buy a 256 meg one, buy the 500 or the 512 or whatever it's called, get the big one. And so I did. I said, okay, the price has come down. I'll get one of those, put it in there. It's easy to put in.
Okay.
Loaded the Snow Leopard on there, clean, get a clean install to get rid of whatever bug was causing the hanging, and it wouldn't work. It just kept crashing. Kernel panic. Oh, no. You must restart your computer. Well, you don't like to hear that. That's never a good thing.
Right.
So anyway, so I would do that, and I said, oh, man. So I find out that, yeah, it's such an ancient operating system that it didn't know what SSDs were, so it doesn't really work too well. So you need to go with the newer operating system. I'm like, all right, well, I'll bite the bullet and I'll go with the Yosemite there.
Yeah.
And because it's a free upgrade, so I'm going to do that. I'm going to upgrade to this, and boom, it worked. And that was last week. We recorded the show on it, and I was like, wow, this is fantastic. I got all kinds of new things, and it works. It works really great. Obviously, not as fast as the newer computer, no question.
Right.
Does what I want to do, and then. Cut to the day after we recorded. I hadn't even published yet the show yet. And bam, down it goes. Like, it won't even, it just crashes. It won't even restart. I restart and it just hangs. And then I lean in close to read what the text says, and a fist comes out of the screen and punches me in the nose. And I said, yeah, this is old. This is old. This is an old computer.
Right.
Old man. And so nothing I can do. And so I try, you know, everything, disk repair, all the things, all the tricks up the sleeve. And it just basically says, nah, man, you are out of luck on this one. It's done. You have to start over.
Okay.
So I do, because I've backed everything up. I have my files backed up on so many disks right now that, I don't know, use some metaphor. I can't even think of one. A lot of disks.
Okay.
And every iteration of my operating system, I have the existing one that was terrible, I have the new one that was clean, I have the base one, and then I have the backup of Yosemite on a different one. Like, so I'm backing up all the time. It's a great life I lead.
Right.
And so I think, okay, great, I'm gonna clean this hard drive off. And guess what happened in the day it crashed? I found out, oh yeah, hey, you can get a little something called El Capitan.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I just saw that, like, yeah, you know, there's a brand new free operating system from Apple.
And yeah. El Capitan is Spanish for the Capitan. And so I was like, all right, well, I know better than to be an early adopter, but in this case, I don't have a whole lot of choice. I'm not really upgrading. I'm starting fresh. And then so I say, you know what I'm going to do, though? I'm going to be smart about this. I'm not going to just do an upgrade. I am going to do a clean install. And there's a secret trick that you can do to do it. It's not even that secret. It's actually quite easy to do.
Okay.
To do a clean install on the hard drive with El Capitan. So I go and do that. Bam. Do it. Transfer my files over. And then, long story short, I can't install some of the programs I need, like Final Cut Pro, but I can migrate them. So I migrate them over, and wow, everything is we're banging. Not only are we banging on all cylinders, I have extra cylinders that is banging on that I don't even own.
Okay.
Until today.
Oh.
All of a sudden, it just freezes all the time and hangs and blah, 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 blah. And we have a show to do, and I can't sit here and worry about whether or not if this computer is going to work. So I'm freaking out. So I'm really sour now. So what do I do? Do I go back to? So I have the other hard drive on hand. So I quickly, like I'm in the pit crew in Indianapolis. I just 2 minutes before we're going to start the show today, I whip out the old hard drive, the SSD drive, put the old hard drive back in, close it back up. We do the show. Bam.
So now you're back to square one.
I'm back to square one and a half. I mean, I have a clean install of a Snow Leopard, but I think the problem is still there. I don't know. Final Cut Pro works, and the thing is on El Capitan, Final Cut Pro didn't work. It sort of worked, but not really, not what I wanted it to do. Details aren't important here, but I don't know what's going to, you know, what am I going to do? I mean, do I need to buy a new computer? If I do, can I use Final Cut Pro? I don't know.
Okay.
So I'm sour.
Stay tuned.
I don't think anyone's still listening to this one.
Remember when you said long story short?
Yeah, I was lying. I'm looking up, hey, which computer do I want to buy? Even if I do buy, can I easily convert to ProRes from stuff I shot with my 5D Mark II? Because that's my first move, convert everything to ProRes so it's easy to edit.
Okay, what's ProRes?
It just basically, it's a codec. When you shoot with the 5D Mark II, it records it in a MOV file that is like a H.264 compression.
Okay.
That's very compressed. It's good. It's a good image, but when you go to edit that, it puts a lot of strain on your processor, and you don't want to do that, and when you do effects, and the rendering takes forever, especially on an older computer. So the first thing I do before I start editing is I basically take those compressed files and I expand them.
Ah.
Now, it doesn't make the picture any better. It's the exact same picture essentially, except for now it's the files like 8 times larger. So, but when I go to render it or make edits, it just, the editing process goes like that.
Okay.
So I can't do that. I can't seem to get that to work on El Capitan. That's the issue.
I see.
Despite having downloaded the 422, the ProRes update.
Okay, I can feel that you're upset.
Yes. And on top of that, And here's the part where it's sort of like this, the, you shouldn't have to do this in 2015. I go to the El Capitan, and of course now my aperture that I was using doesn't work with El Capitan.
Okay.
Now Lightroom does, and everything I do now is in Lightroom, but I have a whole bunch of libraries still in Aperture. So I don't want to basically, you know, just ignore those now. They're all the edits are done in Aperture.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to click on Aperture, it doesn't load. Well, it says, well, you have to update the latest Aperture. Don't worry, here it is. It won't update. For 3 days, it won't update. It just keeps not available. And then I do my Google research, and they find out, yeah, it's not going to happen. So you have to do a little secret move where you go and delete Aperture from the applications folder, but you don't actually delete it and don't empty the trash, and then you download it again, and then it works.
Oh, my goodness.
Why do we have to do that?
Yeah.
So what I'm thinking is, boy, am I glad that I exported those RAW files a long time ago. I don't have my RAW files built into my Aperture. They're external. They're just sitting there RAW.
Right.
Because if this ever happens again down the future with whatever, you know, El Capitan Part 2, Part Dos, we would probably say, maybe the Aperture gets thrown in the garbage altogether, and now you can't access any of your libraries.
Right.
What if that happens?
Mm-hmm. That's bad news.
It could happen. I mean, if I were to give you like a, you know, 5 1/4 floppy disk, what would you do with it now?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Good point.
Yeah. So that's where we're at. So I have to figure this out. So right now I'm back to square 1.5, and we're working it out, but files are everywhere, and I got to sort this out.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your loss.
Was that short? How long was that?
What? I don't know. It was 15 minutes.
41 minutes?
Yeah. Hey, do you want to hear something in a positive light in terms of technology that I acquired that is good?
Do I?
Yeah. Let's put a positive spin on
this. Yes.
So last time I talked about that I was going to get some new Pocket Wizard stuff, right?
Okay, enough about you.
Okay, so I bought the AC3 Zone Controller. So that's a little tiny, well, tiny, maybe an inch and a half wide piece that goes on the top of the trigger and will control up to 3 zones of lights all via, you know, 3 little click wheels.
This was the Craigslist purchase you were
going to make. No. The Craigslist purchase was an Alien Bee little adapter that goes on the light so that I could control the studio light. This just allows me to, instead of just using ETTL and using flash exposure compensation to control lights, you can do it all manual control via, you know, this uh-huh. little thing that sits on the Pocket Wizard. Now, Yang knew, like I had bought, I don't know, the little controller that is similar, and it was a little LED screen, and, you know, you had little buttons, and you basically, you know, made the controls, and it was on the top of the camera. This is a piece that goes on to the typical Pocket Wizard flexes that I have. It only works with the flexes, I think, and it's a zone controller. And the greatest thing that I've seen for lighting, like in terms of a piece of technology that completely changes everything, it's kind of like the counting clicks is to changing, you know, making quick adjustments to you know, aperture and you know, on the fly. You just want to quickly, you want to, you know, up or down your aperture, your shutter speed, counting clicks. Well, this is the counting clicks to lighting. Like, it's got little sort of click wheels. And so you've got your ABC. So you got a, let's say, a 3 light setup. And you've got, you know, the light on the left is A, the light in the middle is B, and the light on the right is C. We have 3 little wheels, and it's just click up, click down. So for your bringing those lights up or down, it is fantastic. You don't have to look at anything. You just, it's all by feel, and it's just, it's tactical, or it's tactile. It's tactile, and it's just brilliantly easy. So I bought that, and if anybody has Pocket Wizards, to me that is an absolute no-brainer of a purchase. It's overpriced for what it is. I want to say it's probably on B&H like $75 for the little piece.
Okay,
but it's almost like, why bother with Pocket Wizards if you're not going to have that?
And did you buy it used?
I could not find it used, so had to buy it new. I searched for on Craigslist for about 3 months. If it ever pops up, it's gone in about 15 seconds. Uh-huh. And it just doesn't really exist in the used world for very long. I would have had to drive 4 hours to find one. And I think that would have cost me more than just buying it at the store. So
interesting. Yeah. That is it. No, I'm not. That sounded condescending, but it actually is very interesting that you say that, because normally you don't say anything interesting. Mm-hmm. No, just kidding. No, mm-hmm. but what I meant to say was that interesting because today, later on, we're going to talk about how to sell your equipment on Amazon or on Craigslist and wherever you sell it.
Okay.
And there is that whole, to me, there is that whole break point where it's like, yeah, okay, this one's new. New, it's 100. This one's only 60, but it's in Chilliwack.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not often I'm out in Chilliwack, maybe watching the Chiefs play or buying corn. So other than that, I'm not going to pop out there. So it's cheaper for me to buy it new.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Good thinking. Awesome. And how long have you had this for?
Just for a week. So I just got it last weekend, used it for one photo shoot, and was absolutely blown away by how awesome it was.
Were your clients blown away also?
My clients love the fact that everything was done super quick and the results were good. So
was it your kids?
No, it was. Oh. Well, you'll see. It's in the photo challenges, and I did a full shoot for them, a white background photo shoot. So yeah, so I used a photo challenge picture from the shoot, and yeah, we'll talk about that when we get there.
Awesome. Great.
There you go.
Well, besides that, did you shoot anything interesting?
I shot hockey. I went to a hockey game for the same friends. They were asked if I would be willing to come and shoot their son, who's a competitive hockey player, at the rink. And I said,
what does competitive mean? In what league?
He's playing in the top tier of whatever 9-year-olds are. Adam. Okay. So he's in the top tier of Adams. Yeah, he's
Adam AAA.
They call it something different. They do it the other way now. It's like A1 is the best, A2, A3. Like it was backwards to what I'm used to as a kid. But yeah, he's playing in that top tier, and it's 9 and 10 year olds, and he's one of the few 9-year olds to be playing in that top tier for 9 and 10 year olds.
I see.
So it was good hockey. I was impressed by how good the hockey was. But yeah, I went to the rink and shot, like we talked about, 70 to 200 in low light. And
which rink was this at?
This was at Minoru.
Okay, Minoru 1.
Yeah, so the big rink at Minoru, which is
one of your better lit rinks, though.
I guess. I mean, it's still not good. But yeah, I'm still shooting in order to get up fast enough shutter speed. So if I want to shoot hockey and these kids are moving pretty quick, minimum shutter speed of 1/1000th of a second. Mm-hmm. And usually I was trying to go a bit higher. I'm shooting at ISO 6400 to ISO 8000 on the Canon 60. So, and you know, and you're definitely going to get some grain there, especially behind their mask, because they're always going to be a little bit darker, like, you know, under the mask. So their faces will get a little bit more grain, but still the photos look really good, even at ISO 8000.
Better than mom's iPhone.
A little bit better than mom's iPhone. And, you know, and they're still sharp and all of that. You're just going to get lots of noise.
Yeah, but who cares when you compare? Like, I look at the pictures that I have when I was playing, when I was that age. I have some pictures from that very age. They're not very good. And my dad was a pretty good photographer.
Yeah, it's just the technology just couldn't do it.
No.
The beauty of it, too, is, you know, again, I talked about this back a while back about the noise reduction in Lightroom. As long as you don't go way overboard, you can dampen it down enough that nobody would notice. Like, they would still notice the noise, but it wouldn't be sort of an overwhelming hit you over the head with digital noise.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
There you go. So I'm going to do some more hockey because there's a tournament this weekend, and I really enjoyed doing it. So I said, the kids are friends. They love going to the rink and running around. So to me, it's just kind of a fun thing, and I'll probably go and do a game for the other son because, you know, of course, once you do it for one kid, the other one's like, what about me? I want the personal photographer at my game, right?
So. And they have to learn that life is fair like that. So, yeah, you better go do it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, everything will work out if you just whine enough.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So
that's what I'm teaching my kids.
There. Yep. So there you go.
I'm also hopefully going to go shoot some hockey.
They have that there?
They sure do. They have. I'm going to go watch. I'm not sure when it's going to happen, if I'm even allowed to bring my camera in there. I'm assuming I am, but a team called the Mannheim Adler.
Okay.
They're big time pro. They have ex NHLers playing. Actually, a friend of your brother-in-law, guy he played with in junior.
Okay.
He's old. A guy named Glenn Metropolit, the Canadian legend from Eastern Canada. Because he bounced around a lot, but he played a lot in Europe. And I guarantee you, if you know hockey, you know Metro.
Okay.
I mean, if you really know hockey, not if you don't know hockey like on our level.
No, but he played for the Montreal Canadiens, and he played for the Philadelphia Flyers. So he definitely Bruins. He played some games, a few hundred games in the NHL anyway.
Capitals, yep. I know he gets a pension. He played enough to qualify. That's what I know.
Okay.
But he's been playing in. I just read a really interesting article about him. Actually, he signed his biggest contract a few years ago to go play 1 year in Russia.
Yeah.
And then at the last minute didn't go. Didn't go. His wife didn't want to go, and so he took a massive. Well, he said in the paper he signed for $1.2 million for the year. His wife, at the last minute, got cold feet, so he signed back in Switzerland for $400,000. And a few weeks later, that plane crashed of that team, and the whole team died.
Oh no!
So yeah, he lost $800,000, but he's alive.
He didn't go in the plane, yeah.
He would have been on that plane. So, so now he plays for Mannheim, and I'm going to go up and go say hello. I remember him from 20-plus years ago. I knew him from when he played with your brother-in-law, and really great guy. And I'm interested to go take pictures of German hockey.
Okay.
So I'll let you know how that goes. I'll probably bring my 85 mil, though, just to be less assuming and get enough light in there, so...
Okay. Are Other you going to shoot through the glass?
I don't know where I'll sit. I don't know if, you know, I don't know if I'm buying tickets. He's giving me tickets. I don't know if I get to play in the game. We don't know yet.
Most rinks, it's pretty hard without being on the players' benches to not shoot through the glass, or you're shooting from up high and sort of shooting down on it.
Right.
So, you know, it is one of those, depending on the rank, if there is a place to stand, certainly you're going to get a lot better shots at ice level. But like your photo from last week in the photo challenge, you're going to get a completely different look through the glass. Now, they'll still look good, but like you'll get that haze a little bit. Even though you can't really tell you're shooting through the glass when you look at the image, you know when you compare it to the image shot not through the glass that the contrast, the color, everything is different. It's like your haze filter.
I have no idea what my photo challenge was last week.
Your photo challenge was Sam with your dirtied up filter on there.
Oh, yeah, that was last week. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
No, my previous week is now all a blur of computer hatred, so I've blocked that out.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, yeah. If that image still exists on my computer on one of my 18 hard drives, I don't even know.
Well, it's on the internet forever.
Yeah, great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So looking forward to doing that. Other than that, not much. I did shoot a picture of my son this morning. Just because I like, you know, the fall colors are rolling in now, right? I don't know how it is in Vancouver, but
a little
oranges,
bit.
Yeah, the oranges and yellows are really showing up here, and it's just a great time to shoot. So I just snapped a quick photo of my son. We were out in the yard today, and so I'll post that just because I like the colors so much, and it was just such an easy shot. Again, no, didn't have to light anything, just here he is leaning against a tree.
Okay.
So there's that, and we're in the fall outfit, the full flannel.
Nice.
Okay, photo challenge.
Yes.
This week was white background. Now, you posted a couple.
I did.
Which one do you want to go with? The first one?
Yeah, I'll go with the first one. I just kind of wanted... I put a second one in there just to show a wider shot and something that was a little different than your typical. So, but I'll use the first one, the close up. I like the close up smiley faces, but it's all right. more of a standard picture versus the other one was a little bit outside of the box.
Yeah, this one. I mean, the challenge was white background. It wasn't seamless white, so this definitely fits. I had more of a get to mine, we'll see that I wanted to do the full seamless because I just got the seamless, and of course you want to use it. But here's the just a simple white background shot. So
well, and I did see yours, and I'd already done my photo shoot, and I specifically chose one that was different that anybody could have done without a seamless, like just right. having a light colored wall and lighting it properly. Anyone could replicate a similar photo to what I've done, and these look great on the wall. Like I am sure this will go up on their wall. Well, I know it will go up on their wall amongst a whole bunch of other white ones I did, because they had a bunch of empty white frames when I 8x10 frames when I was visiting their house, and they said, "All right, if we come do a photo shoot, we want a bunch of 8x10 crops, and we want them similar." Like they kind of wanted to have a bunch of different white backgrounds to all fill in these frames, and they'd look good together. So that's kind of what my thinking was when I went. So some I did the full length, and some I did crop. They had different outfits. We did the whole thing. I'll probably post a good chunk of the photo shoot on our Facebook page. So people can see the difference, because some are whole family, and the beauty of that big wide seamless is you just have so much more versatility.
That was why I bought the big one myself, whatever it was, 2.72 meters, whatever that.
Yeah, I think the one I've got is like whatever 10 feet wide.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Whatever it works out to be. That's pretty much the standard one. Get the big one. It's a little unwieldy. I mean, you need some space to pull it out.
Yeah.
But once it's set up, it is awesome, because what I like the best about the white background is that once you get it, you can light it and then forget about it.
Right.
And you can have your subject move around a little bit. You have a little bit of freedom to move around, and you're not worried about the background at all. It's just going to be blown out. Boom. Looks good. And that's it. It's just the freedom to actually focus on taking pictures and getting good reactions out of the and expressions out of your subjects. And that's a great example of that, because they all look great.
And the nice thing was that this took no time. Again, once I set it up before they even got there, I did one or two test shots, and then it was just, you know, try different outfits, try different poses, and just click, click, click. Again, having that little click wheel on top of my camera made for, you know, I played around a little bit. Oh, brought one light down, brought one light up a little bit. And so, you know, I was kind of tinkering and playing as I went, but for the most part, I left it as it was when I set it up and just kind of moved the people around. And so, yeah, it was really, really easy. We probably spent 15 to 20 minutes tops on the whole shoot and got 20 keepers, like 20 good, small, all kids smiling. Cause you know, these are three kids aged 6 to 11, I'm going to say, and you're going to get a lot of silly faces and a lot of fooling around. So in that short of a window to get as many good shots with all kids looking and smiling, that was really nice.
Yes.
So
yeah, we got an email from a friend of the show, Matt, said, "Hey, I see these pictures. It makes me want to go buy a white background."
Yeah. White backgrounds are good.
Do it. I mean, it's even like, first of all, you can use a white wall if you want.
Yes.
Like and for a long time I did, like, just because that was, you know, we have tons of white walls here, so I saw no reason in doing it in buying the white background. As long as you have, I would say minimum two flashes, really you need three to do it properly, you can go ahead and use your wall. But you're constantly taking the pictures off, and then maybe you're photoshopping out the nails that you have to hold the photos on your wall. Like, that gets tiresome.
And that's the other thing to add here. There is zero Photoshop. There's yes. no touching up the white. There's nothing. All I did was basically play with the whites slider in Lightroom just to get it to the tone of white that I wanted. But once you do your test shots and you have that white, you know, evenly lit, which you can pretty much tell on your LCD if you have a half decent camera, and just looking at the histogram where the whites are, I didn't have to do anything afterwards as far as cleaning up any whites or grays, and I'm okay with it not being perfect. You know, like, it's as long as it's not a huge dark spot on the back or a massive shadow. And in which case I would hope I would catch that in my test shots. This is very minimal post-production, played with just, you know, saturation a little bit, and that's it. And then done. And Specifically, I told them when they were coming over to bring some bright colors because bright colors look good on white background. If everyone's wearing black or gray, it's not going to look as good. So I like the jersey right. shot because of, you know, the jerseys and the colors are vibrant.
Yep. They are.
There you go. It stands out against that white background.
And it looks great. Nice little backlight on her hair and just you know, great all around. And then we'll go to my image as well. Very, very similar. I went with the full length one, like as I mentioned, to show off that it is, in fact, a seamless and why you should buy a seamless.
Yeah.
Which all in, I think if you buy a halfway decent stand, lighting like the stand and the paper, the full paper, you're going to spend under $200.
Yes.
Yeah. You can spend way under, as a matter of fact. Don't.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. The quality of the stand is definitely the difference maker because, you know, like you're going to put this thing up, what, 10 feet high sometimes.
Yes.
And so if you have a very flimsy stand, you're going to be in danger of having, especially if you're going to use it with kids, this thing falling over on somebody.
Yes, absolutely. And so I recommend drop $100 on it. It's definitely worth $100.
The Savage one, because that's the one that I have, I'm very happy with. Like, it's probably the one that's the most readily available anywhere. And I think the package I purchased actually came with a white paper roll. So it was like the stand, you know, you get two light stands, essentially a crossbar, and then the paper roll, which it came with white, I want to say was, $200 or
that
just
was the narrow paper roll or the big?
Yeah, it came with a narrow paper roll.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So anyway, here's mine. I went with, you know, the same kind of thing you did, just the vibrant colors. My daughter picked her outfit out herself, just so you know.
Yeah.
My wife wanted everybody to know that. She didn't put that ensemble together.
She looks like she's back in the wild, wild west.
She is. Yeah. She ended up getting chewing tobacco spit all over my white background. It was ugly. but again, this was exactly what you described. I got this all set up because you know, with your kids, unfortunately, you have a window of, oh, missed your window, and that's it. Now we're not shooting pictures anymore. So that was it. So I got it all dialed in, shot the gray card, and then brought her down. And basically, I think this was the third of three pictures that I snapped.
Yeah.
And then again, in terms of Photoshop, absolutely none. I can't remember if I cropped it slightly. I might have. When I bring my raw images into Lightroom, I have a custom preset that I apply to every image on the way in.
Okay.
Which is basically three simple adjustments that I know I'm going to make. One, the contrast slider is something around between 15 and 20, so just a little bit to the right, just to add a little pop to my images.
Mm-hmm.
What else do I do? I have the vibrance, just a couple clicks to the right, just to add, again, a little more pop. And I forget what else I do. Something else that's very, very minor. And every image I get, I import, just starts with that baseline. That is what you see here. I changed nothing else. Again, possibly the crop, I don't remember. Looks like I did crop.
Yeah, it's not a 4x6 crop.
Right. So I think I just brought it in a little bit tighter. Other than that, this is out of camera, essentially. Like I would dial my image style. If I was shooting JPEG, I would dial my image style to look just like this.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you bring the RAW file in, it comes in flat, so you basically have to reapply that image style. That's what I do on import. So this is for all of, you know, in effect, out of camera. No touch-ups, nothing.
Nice. It looks good. Yeah.
That's why you buy a white background.
Yeah. And people, you know, see this and they're like, oh man, like, you know, where'd you get this done? Obviously, you know, asking you that, they know, but when they see this kind of photo, they think, oh, you must have had to go to a studio. Like, this is something that you pay a lot of money for. And I guess you do, because you have to have all the equipment to do this. but it's way easier than I think people might think.
It's yes. Well,
easier. But, well, I guess with the know-how.
When people come to my house, I do want to charge them a lot of money, so keep yes. it under your hat.
Yeah, yeah. And in my house, the pain of it is that I have to set it up each time. So when you posed this challenge, I was a little bit sour because A, I had just done it the weekend before and the weekend before that, and mm-hmm. I don't have the space for a 10-foot paper roll to stay there all the time. So I'm like, oh, right. again, I got to get this thing out. And I knew my kids weren't going to cooperate, so that's why I had to go to another family.
Yes.
And it was a win-win. I got my photo challenge photo. They got a great set of photos that they can hang on their wall, and in turn I think I'm going to get some biscotti made for me, so
so you owe me half that biscotti.
Yeah just chocolate dipped over. By the way, chocolate
Ooh,
dipped
with, that's
yeah.
my favorite. I know yeah. it's sacrilege to say you're supposed to have hazelnuts or almonds or something, but that's my favorite anyways. Yeah, white background, love it. I'm going to shoot mine a lot more. It is kind of a thing, you know, you don't want to get it out all the time. I actually have a large job coming up where I'm going to shoot a ton of white background portraits.
So you're just going to leave it up?
Not with my kids. It's going to be three different dates, once a month kind of thing. So I'll set it up each time.
Yeah.
I will put tape marks on the ground though, because it's going to be one project where the images have to look pretty much identical.
Right. Yeah.
But yet with like 30 different people coming in and out of my house.
Right.
And so I'll probably tape it off and say, okay, here's this stand was here, just so I can get
yeah.
quality control.
Right.
But the good news is I don't think they're going to do white seamless. They just want to do white background. So that makes it a little bit easier. Just not having to roll out that much more paper.
Yes, yeah. definitely. White background is much easier for setup.
And one last thing before we move on, they don't stand on it. If it's just a white background.
Right.
If and that's kind of,
yeah, it gets dirty.
It gets dirty. That's where yeah. it gets to be an issue, but great. I think coming up, and then once the weather gets a little more sour, we'll do an episode about how to do a white background, how to light it and all the good stuff.
Haven't we done that?
I don't remember. I think we did a white background, but not necessarily a white seamless. I don't know. I'll have to go back into the archives.
Yeah, I think we might have done it. You check, okay. But I think we might have done it.
Great. You
have
an idea.
How do you think I know?
Yeah, I don't know. Good point. Okay. This week's topic, I wanted to talk about something that I have never, ever, ever done.
Okay.
Telling a short story.
Right.
I've never bought or sold used photo equipment.
What?
Well, okay, wait a second. In the modern era, I've done older, like I've bought
your 5D Classic, your Canonette.
Yeah, okay, but in my film stuff, you're right. 5D Classic, you're right. I did buy that. Okay, I've never sold anything.
Okay,
that's more to the point. I actually, you're right. The 5D Classic was other stuff I have bought, but I thought, oh geez, no lenses or bodies. But you're right. I did buy the 5D Classic. Other than that, no, everything's been pretty much new, except for the old film stuff.
I've bought tons and sold tons.
That's why I'm going to ask you, because you know, I've held on to stuff which I looking back now, I should have sold, and, you know, and didn't. But so I want to talk to you about selling.
Okay.
So I basically use I buy new and I use it until it falls apart. That's kind of a habit that I would like to break.
Okay.
I think it's a bad habit, and I'm jealous of your selling stature.
Okay.
What do you sell?
Stuff that I stop using.
Okay, but you could still use some of it.
That's true. I think it comes down to, usually if there's something I want more, I feel compelled to sort of make a trade. So. Mm-hmm. In the case of the Canon T2i backup camera, I wanted a full frame backup camera. And
right.
so I decided, okay, well, I don't need both, having three cameras, and then, you know, really I saw no reason to keep the T2i. So then I sold the T2i, and then I thought, okay, well, I had that 30 mil lens that only goes on the crop camera, doesn't fill the the frame size of a full frame. So then I thought, okay, well, that was a pretty even trade. I could sell the T2i with that lens and then turn around and use that money to buy. So it was kind of like, you know, thinking of it in a sort of logical economic terms, you know, I was just making a trade, and I had no reason to I didn't have, it wasn't a need, it was a want. And so when it's a want, not a need, I felt like I didn't need to drop more money, and hence I created the revenue from stuff I already had.
That's a healthy attitude.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I look at it like, how do I best look at it? Like, I don't know how I look at it. You just do the rest of the show.
Well, I'm not into photography to make a living, and you are. So I probably look at things different. I'm looking at it from, you know, the hobbyist side of things. So I still do work, photography work, and I still make money from it, but I kind of look at it as a money in and out. I'm not going to buy a new piece of gear unless I've earned that money. So again, like I did a couple of jobs in the last month, and then I looked at, okay, well, what did photography bring in? Okay, I will only spend to that level. And so, and if there's something I want and I haven't earned that, then I look at, okay, well, is there something I'm not using anymore? And then I can turn that into the new item I want. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically how photography works for me. I do, you know, a few hundred dollars worth of work. And then that, if there is something I want, I don't always do it. Sometimes I just, you know, put the money in my account, but sometimes I think, okay, like in this case, I wanted the Pocket Wizard, you know, little adapter and whatnot. And so I had made a few hundred dollars. And so then I went and looked in Craigslist, and I bought some other things I wanted from Craigslist, and what I couldn't find there, then I bought new. But I love, you know, buying things on Craigslist, because, you know, if you're someone who's willing to wait and sort of watch, you can buy things often at, you know, sometimes half the price of what they would cost you new. And once you use it, for 5 minutes, it's used anyways. So I always find that, not so much for lenses, but things like flash triggers, used doesn't matter. It's not going to matter at all.
See, I'm always, and this is a terrible attitude. I'm always thinking, well, he probably dropped it.
Yeah,
you know, and odds are he probably didn't, or she probably didn't. You know, but I guess. I mean, I approach it also from a logical standpoint, but my logic is flawed. For me, I look at it like, well, I'm going to extract more value. Like for me, maybe I'll sell it for $200, but I could probably get $210 worth of value out of it if I really tried.
Right. I see where you're coming from.
It's for wrong.
For me, on the buying end of things, more so than the selling, on the buying end of things, how the, like, if I see something that I want, I send an email to the person, how they answer the email is probably going to dictate whether I'm going to pursue meeting them, buying it. And so I very much, you know, like people who have, you know, 3-word answers to a question, I'm not buying from. I feel like they're not someone that I necessarily can trust. And so I know I'm probably reading into it way more, but all of the interactions that I've had in the last year buying stuff on Craigslist have been people that I knew from a few simple emails were legitimate people that I was going to buy from. And turns out all of them were. And all of them were, you know, photographers, and usually serious photographers. Some of them, you know, worked in photography. And I had extended conversations when I met them, but I could just tell from the emails that this is somebody that I was willing to deal with. A perfect example, I'm trying to sell those Yong Nuo triggers that I just put up for the last few days. And I've had a few emails and interactions, and they're people I don't even want to sell to. Okay. And just because of how they write, they're very short, they ask the wrong questions, and I'm like, I don't even want to sell to this person. I don't even want to meet this person. And so I have those feelings and make those judgments very quickly just based on the email interaction. Like, I don't want this person coming to my house. You know, like,
okay, that, so that's, you're one of the people who, I mean, I try to think about who sells, like what kind of different people sell equipment, photography equipment. And there's people like yourself who are upgrading.
Yeah.
And especially people like yourself who don't necessarily need to sell. Like, you're doing it because it, you know, it makes sense, but
yeah,
if you don't sell those triggers by the end of the day, you know, no one's going to break your thumbs.
I don't care if I don't sell them at all, to be honest. Right. But I just, I also don't want to meet some shady character behind the dumpster at the mall. You know, like that's not how it's going down. And there's also normally I've no problem, you know, like giving my phone number and if they call. But when the people ask the wrong questions and there's almost like a rude tone you can get from an email. Like, I don't know if there's a three word. A good example was the person like asked, where are you located? That was the first question. I was like, all right, I'll give them the general vicinity. And the next thing was, what's your number? Except for it wasn't what's your number, it's what's UR number, what's ER number. And I was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm like, my next email was, my policy is I don't give out my phone number on Craigslist, which isn't true, just true for that person.
Just true for 17-year-olds.
Yeah, just true for the fact that this all just did not feel like someone I was going to sell to or meet. It was more, I don't want to meet this person, so therefore I can wait for a more legitimate buyer. Yeah,
but that's interesting. That's a hot move. The other kinds of people who are selling are perhaps someone's changing hobbies or, you know, and they're just going to sell all their equipment.
Right.
They're just going to offload it. Maybe their one of their parents died and they were a hobby photographer and the kid isn't, and maybe they're selling like an estate sale, something like that.
Yeah, sometimes you'll see like studio clear outs, like where someone had a photography studio and they'll have all kinds of stuff and they're shutting down their studio and they'll have a list that's like, you know, got 50 things on it all itemized. And those are great because, you know, they need to sell. They've got good quality equipment and, you know, the stuff has probably largely been used in that very clean indoor setting, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, so now when you're going to sell something, you've decided to sell like your triggers, how do you establish the market value for those?
I usually look at what, like, if you're selling it, chances are somebody else is selling it somewhere. Mm-hmm. But you can easily just go on Craigslist and just look, okay, what is this going for? Some people are selling it brand new, see what it's going for new versus, you know, what you paid for it. And then I usually, you know, look at, okay, well, what are they selling for? What's the quality and the condition? And then, you know, you establish the market and a price accordingly. And depending on your urgency to sell, like if you're not urgent to sell, I'd probably price it somewhere in the middle. The key I've always found with selling on Craigslist is take a half-decent picture. You know, if you take a half-decent picture of the image, people already are going to look. Most people have, they're just using the pictures from the internet. So they're not using an actual picture of their particular product. So that's half of the people. And right away, that kind of is a bit of a red flag to me. And then other people have no idea how to take a picture at all. And in which case, you know, again, that's a little bit of a turnoff as far as, you know, am I interested? So I find spend a few minutes and take a decent product shot. And right away, you're kind of ahead of the game.
The couple of times that I do always keep my eye out for things on Craigslist in case I want to, you know, buy something. But one of the things that I recommend you don't do if you're going to sell your camera body is don't take a photo of it with the lens off and no cap on the body.
Oh, I know. That's
just, while it's sitting on a shag carpet.
Yeah. I just don't understand. So you're right away, you're thinking, well, this person didn't take care of it. Like,
correct.
And I agree. I would never buy a camera body like the 5D Classics. Half the pictures, that's what they look like. And you're thinking, all right, well, this thing's completely filled with dust.
Yes, which is going to be anyways, but this is there's going to be kitty litter in this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
So take a good photo. Now, you establish the market value. Do you then further assess and sort of assess the value to yourself? Like you say, all right, these triggers are, I can get $75 for them. They're probably worth about $65 to me right now.
Right.
Do you ever do that and go, well, $10?
I definitely do that. And here's a perfect example. I bought that Canon 5D Classic, whatever, a few months back in the summer, and it came with the grip, right? Came with the battery grip. I haven't used the battery grip. I think I used it once and established I didn't like how it fit into the bag with the grip on it. Realized that I've never used a battery grip. I'm not used to battery grip. Don't particularly like or need a battery grip. Mm-hmm. Looked at the market in terms of, you know, what it would sell for. The thing is brand new. Like it doesn't look like it's ever been used. And so I thought, okay, you know, if the photography store that sells it used sells it for, you know, I think $80 or $90, I'll put it on there for $50. Mm-hmm. And so nobody touched. I got a few inquiries, but nobody, so I dropped it to $40. And I thought, okay, $40 for something I'm not going to use, might as well sell it. Got somebody who said, will you take $20? Said no. At that point, I said, no, I'd rather keep it. Even if I don't use it, I don't want to give it to that person for $20. I'm literally just giving it away.
Right. So that's what I wanted to ask is on top of evaluating the value to yourself, is there a percentage of, like, let's say you bought something for $200, is there a percentage that you will not fall below? Like if eventually the market value goes on that item goes to $25.
Yeah.
Are you going to say, "Yeah, I'll sell it for 25 even though I bought it for 200?"
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that.
Now, see, I wouldn't see. I did the same, and so now I am still the proud owner of a Canon XL1, which I honestly can't give away. I mean, when I bought it, it was sort of the revolution of digital video. We're talking like 1998 and 99 probably, and so there was that was it. I mean, holy cow, that was state of the art at that point.
Right.
And so I think I paid $5,500 for that camera.
Right.
Just standard definition digital video camera, which was a great camera. I love that camera, and it doesn't owe me anything. Like, it was the reason I got to earn a living. But at some point, people were starting to offload them, and I could see them on Craigslist for like $800. And I was like, I'm not going to – $800? Are you kidding me? I paid $5,500 for this, and I know I'm not going to get more for it. I'm not kidding myself. However, why would I let it go for $800?
Right.
Now I couldn't give it away. Like, your kids would just laugh at me if I tried to give it to them. they'd hit me with it.
Yeah.
And so now it's just going to go in the garbage. So I could have had $800 6 years ago.
Yeah, and you're right. There is kind of a line. And I guess it, to me, even Craigslist interactions via email, I take more personally. Mm-hmm. So if the person wrote a nice, friendly email and the offer was $20, I probably would have given it to them. But I don't like the lowballing anonymity that exists on Craigslist. So it really comes down for me to how that email is written. And I felt offended by it. And I was just like, no, I'm not giving. I'd rather throw this thing off a bridge than take $20 and give it to somebody who I have no respect for in terms of how they deal with people. So yeah, that's how everything is for me. And maybe we're unique in that sense that it's not just about the money. It's about, you know, how the interaction goes down. But yeah, I'm like, I don't need that $20.
Exactly. I mean, I'm by no means am I, you know, super wealthy.
Nor am I, but I don't need the $20.
Yeah. No, but I'm at a point now, yeah, where I would not miss that. The $20, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to buy a bubble gum with it or something.
Yeah.
Bubble gum's very expensive in Germany. I don't know if you knew that.
I understand that.
Yeah. So that's why I always bring it back with me from Canada. But had that person written to you and said, hey, listen, I'm a student. I kind of need this for a project. Bam, $20.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So that's good. I mean, and now, yeah, okay, great. Nice to have the $50, but yeah, you get rid of it in that fashion. Now, do you, when you buy something? Now we had an email come in this week. I don't know if it came to our account or just my account, but Martin wrote us an email and said, you know, about the 70 to 200. He bought the F4 with the IS.
Okay.
And one of the factors was resale value.
Okay.
He knew that it would hold its value when he wanted to get rid of it. I never consider that when I buy camera equipment. I always assume I'm going to use it until it turns to dust in my hands. So thus, mm-hmm. I don't really care.
Yeah, I do consider it.
You do when you buy items.
Yes, and a good example was like I bought another Pocket Wizard, like the Flexes. Like I wanted to have four because I want to have one for the camera, and then I want to have, you know, the ability to control three lights, right? So I had from the first guy I bought, I had three, and I think I paid like $120 a pop, and then when I was buying the little Alienbee adapter, the guy had like, you know, one had the box, like it was mint. He actually had two, but I only wanted one. And he was charging, you know, he's like just getting rid of his stuff. And it was $100. I'm like, well, they sell for, you know, if you get a deal, you can get them at a camera store for 200 plus tax. But usually they're about 219 plus tax Canadian. So at this point, $100. And I mean, I tested it. It works fine. I was like, well, I didn't need it. It was a want, but I'm like, at $100, I can turn around tomorrow and get my money back and probably a little bit more. And I know that even if I hold on to that thing and use it for 3 years, I can still turn around and get that $100 back at any time. So to me, it was like, all right, well, yeah, sure. And even if I don't use it, I can turn around and get that money back out. So at a certain price, when you know an item like Pocket Wizards, those Flexes don't stay on Craigslist very long. So when you watch and know the market well enough, you can make those decisions and just say, hey, I can treat this like a rental if I want for 6 months and then turn around and get my money back out.
Okay, so in those terms, it's not necessarily about, I mean, you are considering the resale, but it's more about... I guess insurance policy.
There's a point on anything that you're interested in where if you know the market well enough, when that price drops to a certain point, it's like there's really no risk anymore. Unless you're going to hold on to it, like you say, like your camera for 15 years, and then the technology's changed so much that you can't even use it anymore.
Right. Okay. So how long do you use something before it's time to sell? Do you have like, is there like a formula you calculate, or is it just hey when it's time?
Yeah, for me it's just hey when it's time. And when I don't use it enough, like that's the thing, is that I was using the 6D so much more than I was using the T2i, and I was realizing that just about all of the little shortcomings when I did want to use the backup camera. That's where I decided I want a better backup camera, and so then it was time to trade up. And now I don't even know half the time when I'm looking at my images whether it was shot with the 6D or with the 5D Classic. I really don't. Once they're edited out of camera, the 6D absolutely destroys the 5D Classic out of camera. But once you tweak it in Lightroom, again, I don't know half the time which image I'm looking at from which camera.
Especially when you're resizing and all that stuff. But
yeah.
Yes. So when you use your equipment, do you, like, just in general, like you buy your camera, you go and take photos with it, do you always have it in the back of your mind that, hey, I'm going to resell this, so I better be careful with it?
No. But I do little things like keep boxes. So, I mean, I keep all the boxes for my lenses, for my cameras, for my triggers, because, again, when you turn around and go to sell it and you have the boxes, it's more attractive to buyers. So there are little things that I just like, okay, this isn't going to take up very much space. I'm going to keep my original camera box like I did it with the T2i. I kept receipts. Whenever I buy something myself new, I always keep the receipts. I keep them in the box. I have a sort of area over my closet where I have all the boxes for all the items I have all in a place. So when it turns around, my wife always gives me grief about it. But when it turns around, if I do decide to sell it, I'm like, this is why I kept it, because it looks nice. And if you've got the bubble wrap in there and everything, even better, because again, that's in the back of my mind.
You are better than me.
Okay.
That's what I've come up with, concluded here. I think I accidentally have a few boxes because I didn't throw them out, but not really. But keep in mind, I am moving from, you know, going back and forth between continents, and it's not like I'm going to fly with those boxes.
Right.
So that is part of it. But even back in the day, which was a Wednesday, by the way, I didn't keep the boxes very often, and I should have. I mean, for that very reason. Now, I do know people who, as soon as they get an item, you know, put the plastic coating on it, like grandma's couch, and just so that they don't mark it up, so that when they sell it, they can sell it like new.
Yeah,
I can't imagine doing that. I don't abuse my equipment, but I do definitely use it.
Yes. And I do as well. Now, do you think if you were buying an item as a consumer on Craigslist, would it matter to you if somebody had the box when they're selling it or not?
No, for me it wouldn't, but I might be kind of an idiot. But it would matter to me if, like, I have, like, in this whole computer debacle that I've been going through, I did some quick looks on Craigslist for laptops, which is something I'd rather buy new, but just looking around to see what's out there, and a number of people have said, "Oh, yep, you know, kept it nice since the beginning. Had a cover on the keyboard and all that." That was a red flag to me. In a weird way, because I had a friend growing up who he was into Volkswagens, loved Volkswagen Golfs for whatever reason. Okay.
Yeah.
He would buy them used, like one or two or a couple years old, and then drive them for 3 years and resell them. First thing he did when he got home on day one, disconnect the speedometer.
Okay.
So that the odometer would not run. So he'd put, you know, whatever 1,000 kilometers on the thing, but it wouldn't register. So he would basically sell it for the exact same kilometers as he bought it for.
Right.
Which is fraud. You can't actually do that. That's illegal. But I just find that people who take too good of care of things, I'm just wary of that, and to me it alarm bells go off.
Right.
Could be me. I'm going to blame that guy.
Well, and with cameras, I mean, you hear all the time, oh, it's had a UV filter on since day one. You know, when you're talking about lenses. So it's like, oh, this thing can't have a mark on it. It's had a UV filter on since day one. How do you know that to be true? Like, you know, as a consumer, mm-hmm. anybody can say that. I could say I don't ever use a lens, you know, like a UV filter. But I mean, I could easily just put that in my ad, right?
Right, right.
We're assuming everyone's honest, but it's probably not the case.
Right. So there you go. That's it. I think that's all I want to know about selling.
Yeah.
You've had good experiences. I think I'm... I mean, it's not a big thing here in Germany. Craigslist doesn't really exist, believe it or not.
You can also buy used stuff at the camera stores, which gives you... You're going to pay a little bit more for sure than on Craigslist most yes. of the time, not always. Mm-hmm. But it does give you, generally speaking, the camera stores around here anyways, give you a 30-day money-back guarantee. I bought the Nikon SB28 flash used from a right. camera store. And I think I bought something else used from a camera store too, and both times good experience. So that's a thing too.
I actually did. Now that you mention it, I did buy a couple of used SB28s from the camera store here in Germany, mostly because again, there's no Craigslist, and I just couldn't find them. And so you're gonna pay probably a 10% premium.
Yeah, it's not, and sometimes people overcharge on Craigslist anyways, and so if the item is hard to find, sometimes it can actually be cheaper at the camera store.
And that's true.
And it is, again, it's one of those peace of mind things too. If it doesn't work the way you thought, you can take it back.
Do you even bother when you put something for sale on Craigslist, do you even bother to say, well, in your head, I paid $100 for it, so I'm going to charge $100, no tax?
No, that never comes up.
Okay, so you do drop the price because you understand. The price,
yes. And I drop it significantly. To me, it usually, you know, depending on the item and how hard it is to find, usually at least 30%. I'm going to say sometimes, you know, 40, 50%. Like on the triggers, like on the Yongnuo triggers, basically charging 50% of what I paid.
Right.
So I figure, and like I say, at that point, that's my breaking point where I'd rather keep a backup set of triggers if I can't get that for them.
Okay, so what did you pay for the triggers, roughly?
Well, I bought them as set. I want to say they were about $110 Canadian for a set of two. So I did that twice. So there's $220,
okay.
Right? And then plus tax or whatever. So let's say roughly $250 for four triggers. And then the other thing on top of that was like... 65 in tax, like the special transmitter that I just bought, like whatever, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 months ago,
right.
Or 6 months, I don't know. So so that on top of, so little over $300 is what I would say all in.
Okay.
And so I listed them for $160.
For $160, okay.
Yeah. So basically what it came down to, it was half.
So now in your head, I mean, if you were to list them for, say, start at $200, not get any nibbles, and then maybe do it for $180 in a couple of weeks, you might sell them for $180.
Right.
But you know at $160, you're probably going to sell them tomorrow.
I like I say, I don't do that messing around. I sell them for right. what I think it's worth. And, you know, if it doesn't sell for that, then I'll hold on to them. Like, I never know. I might need, or there'll be situations where I might not want to put the Pocket Wizards into play. These do everything the Pocket Wizards do. They're not as easy to, easy to use. Like, the Pocket Wizards, they've thought of everything. They've mm-hmm. thought of everything, and they've made ease of use a difference. And, you know, reliability's always been a thing, but I've always found the Yongnuos reliable. So I could, in any situation, just say, you know what, I'm going to go with the Yongnuos. So I feel like at $150, I'll just hold on to them, or maybe there'll be a friend somewhere down the road that I'd say, you know, hey, try them out. Like, there's that side of it, too. Mm-hmm. That I don't want to just literally give them away for something that works perfectly and I've taken good care of.
But on the other hand, like, let's say you put them up there, you can sell them tomorrow for $160. But if you wanted $180, it'd take 2 weeks of dancing and answering emails and phone calls.
Exactly. Exactly.
For $20, that's what you have to assess. Like, okay, what's my return on investment here?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, the problem is with my thinking is that, you know, as soon as you put them up for 160, then you get all the emails that say, what's your bottom line? What's your lowest price? You know what my response has been to this point? Because I've had a couple of those. 160.
I would come back with 180 and just tell them it's 180.
Yeah. I hate that email. Don't be that guy. If you buy anything on Craigslist, you're better off just making an offer, like, I'll give you 140. But for someone who's priced and listed something, and you know, clearly, if you know what that item is, you probably know what it sells for, and you know that it's already at half the price that it sells for, to turn around and say, what's your lowest price, is just like, you've already, in my mind, you're not a legitimate buyer. You're not a legitimate buyer at that point, and yes. or you're someone who thinks, I'm just going to give it to you for free.
I used to do that a lot, though. When I was dating, I'd go up to girls and go, what's the ugliest guy you'll have coffee with? I'll go outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much how it goes. It doesn't work so well. Awesome. This was actually far more interesting than I expected.
Okay.
If I'm being honest with it. To me, anyways, to everybody else, we'll see.
Yeah.
Next week's challenge, Adam.
Fall.
That's going to be fall colors. I wrote down fall colors and then put obviously next to it.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you're going to have fall colors. We have them here. It's such a great time. I really do love this time just for the colors. So,
okay.
That's the challenge. Or white background part two, your call.
Oh, yeah, another white background.
and then you have to Photoshop the fall colors in. That's what you do, green screen fall colors.
Okay.
Wow, that was weird.
Yeah.
Websites, Adam.
AdamSchwartz.ca.
Great. You can find my stuff at AlanAtridge.com or the two of us at TwoHosers.com, where you can find the pictures and links and everything we talked about, and maybe even buy Adam's Yongnuo triggers from him.
Yeah. Vancouver maybe. Craigslist for anybody who's local.
If they're still up. It's yeah. He lists them in the missed connection section, though, so
yeah,
they're hard to find.
Facebook. Oh, did you say Facebook?
Facebook. Check it out. Check us out on Facebook and buy stuff on Amazon. That's it.
Okay.
Until next week, get out there and make better photos.